If you're like most people, you open the news, and wow, it's just headlines swirling around the Middle East, isn't it? You see China, Russia, Iran, they're constantly in the mix. And honestly, it can feel less like understanding current events and more like trying to solve some giant puzzle, but you only have half the pieces.
It's definitely overwhelming sometimes. So much going on.
Exactly. Well, today we're going to do a deep dive into some really ancient texts, specifically the visions of the prophet Daniel. We want to explore if they might offer a surprising, maybe even a startling framework for making sense of these complex modern events.
Think of it as maybe a unique shortcut, a way to get a well-informed perspective on what could be unfolding right now.
And importantly, we're approaching this from a non-dispensational viewpoint.
Can you clarify that quickly? Non-dispensational.
Sure. It basically means we see God's plan unfolding, continuously through history, not in separate distinct chunks or dispensations, but as one grand connected narrative.
Got it. One single story.
Where do we start in Daniel?
We'll look at two key parallel visions. First, Nebuchadnezzar's dream of that great statue in Daniel chapter 2. And second, Daniel's own vision of four terrifying beasts in Daniel chapter 7.
And both describe a sequence of global systems or world powers, right, that rise up.
Precisely. And the absolute core idea here, the thing that unlocks this interpretation, is what we call interdependent concurrency.
Interdependent concurrency. Okay, break that
It
down.
means these global systems, these empires, they don't just replace each other one by one. Like Babylon falls, Persia rises, Greece rises, Rome rises. That's not quite it. Instead, they rise sequentially, yes, one after another, but they continue to exist concurrently at the same time.
Ah, okay. So they overlap.
They overlap and they're bound together. It's like a hierarchy. They depend on each other. Each new system doesn't just wipe the slate clean. It actually leverages the infrastructure, the foundations of the ones that came before it.
So it's like layers building up.
Exactly. Imagine this complex interwoven structure. Each new layer builds on and relies on the previous ones. And together, they form this this global world system that impacts everything.
That concept, interdependent concurrency, that's a
Yeah, that's fascinating. It really reframes how you'd normally think about these prophecies. So when we talk about these systems, these metals and beasts, we're not just discussing, say, ancient Babylon or Persia.
Not in this view, no. We're talking about modern and potentially future global powers, entities actively shaping our world right now.
Okay, so let's unpack them, starting with the first one, the head of gold. Absolutely, let's begin there. Daniel 2 gives us the head of gold, and the parallel in Daniel 7 is the lion with eagle's wings.
Lion with eagle's wings. Powerful imagery.
Very. And from this futurist perspective, it's not just about, an empire with a lot of gold bullion. This represents a foundational system of global finance.
Global finance, like the world economy.
Essentially, yes. It's built on a universal standard of value and debt. Think of it as the ultimate financial authority, kind of like gold itself used to be. Now, the eagle's wings, that symbolizes its initial rise, incredibly swift, majestic, almost like a divinely helped surge to power, rapid global reach.
Okay.
But then the proxy says the wings are plucked off, and it's made to stand on 2 feet like a man, given a man's heart.
What does that suggest?
It suggests a significant change, maybe a crisis, a restructuring that grounds the system. Makes it more bureaucratic, maybe more humanistic, less soaring than its initial rise. But crucially, this financial architecture, this gold system, becomes the essential foundation. All the later systems have to use it.
Okay, connecting that to today. The parallel with China seems pretty striking.
How so?
Well, we've seen China's incredible economic and military rise, haven't we? Almost eagle-winged these past few decades. And it's not just raw power, it's the financial strategy. Think about the Belt and Road Initiative.
Global infrastructure.
Right, creating this huge trade network, using a financial standard, maybe not gold, but like gold to exert influence, or, their push for digital currencies, redefining
That
transactions.
fits the model.
And the idea of its wings being plucked, maybe that points to a future check on its expansion, becoming more of a grounded, dominant, but maybe more bureaucratic power. That man's heart idea.
That interpretation aligns very well, becomes the foundational financial layer. Now, moving on.
The next layer.
The chest and arms of silver in Daniel 2. And its parallel in Daniel 7 is the bear.
The bear, that symbol is often associated with.
Russia, yes. And we interpret this silver system as one of resource-based militarism. Its strength comes from controlling vital physical things, energy like oil and gas, minerals, metals, and the military hardware you build from them.
Resource power.
Exactly. But here's what's critical. This system doesn't replace the gold financial system.
Ah, the concurrency again.
Right. It's critically dependent on it. It uses those global economic tools, that financial system, to fund its military expansion, to grab those resources, to project its power. It's a raw, assertive kind of power, but it leverages the more abstract financial system.
And yeah, it's hard not to see Russia in that description. The bear symbol is traditional, of course, but think about its aggressive actions, its expansionist feel, and especially how it leverages resources like natural gas.
The energy weapon.
Precisely. Using pipelines for influence in Europe, military actions in resource-rich areas, the war in Ukraine, deeply tied to territory and resources.
And all of that is funded somehow, using or pushing against the global financial system.
It fits remarkably well. Okay, yeah. So gold finance, silver resource militarism. What's next? Bronze.
Yes. The belly and thighs of bronze from Daniel 2. And this corresponds to the leopard with four wings and four heads in Daniel 7.
A leopard with wings and multiple heads. That's complex.
It is. We see this as representing a system of global religious or spiritual influence.
Religious, okay.
The four wings are particularly interesting. In prophecy, wings often suggest a celestial or a spiritual dimension. So this system's authority isn't just earthly power. It claims something more, maybe a false spiritual authority, a kind of universalist spirituality.
And the four heads.
Now, some see four concurrent powers, but given Daniel 11.2, talking about four successive Persian kings, it seems more likely these represent a succession of influential leaders within this system rather than simultaneous ones. And this ideological system, it relies heavily on both the gold finance and the silver resource control to spread its influence. It rises by capturing hearts and minds.
And the bronze. Doesn't bronze often relate to military matters in scripture?
It does. And that's key here, too. The bronze signifies a strong military component that supports and expands this religious influence. It's ideology backed by force.
Wow. Okay, so spiritual influence, maybe a succession of leaders backed by military might and dependent on finance and resources. Where does that point today?
Well, given the emphasis on that spiritual or religious influence combined with military expansion and its geographical implications later in Daniel, it points quite strongly towards a coalition of powers in the Middle East, perhaps led by Iran.
Iran. We've definitely seen its influence expand rapidly, haven't we? Through proxy forces, Hezbollah, the Houthis.
Strategic alliances, yeah.
Right, in Syria, Iraq. And it's not just military. It's fueled by this potent mix of religious ideology and using resources strategically. It challenges the global order with both force and a very powerful spiritual narrative.
It fits the description of this third bronze leopard system rising.
Okay. Gold, silver, bronze. Finance, militarism, religious influence. That brings us to the fourth system, the legs of iron.
Yes, the legs of iron in Daniel 2 and the fourth beast in Daniel 7. This is the final system to achieve dominance before the end. And it's essentially a global infrastructure of totalitarian control.
Totalitarian control. Iron suggests strength, crushing power.
Exactly. It's the overt political and enforcement mechanism. And here's the thing. It fundamentally leverages all the preceding systems.
It uses the others.
Completely.
Yeah.
It doesn't really originate wealth,
yeah,
gold, or resources, silver, or even its core ideology, bronze, in the same way. It seizes control of them. It uses the spiritual system for justification. It's fueled by the world's resources, and it manipulates the global financial system for total conformity. It's parasitic.
Parasitic. That's a strong word. It lives off the others.
Its existence is wholly reliant on controlling the other systems.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting for me. This final system. The statue has feet, right? Feet of iron mixed with clay.
Yes, the feet of iron and clay.
That sounds inherently unstable, yet powerful. What's that about?
It is unstable. That mixture signifies the attempt to fuse rigid, top-down globalist control, that's the iron, with the messy, chaotic, unpredictable passions and divisions of humanity. That's the clay.
And the prophecy says.
It explicitly says they will not adhere to one another. They won't mix properly.
So it's brittle.
Brittle, yet immensely powerful. This forms a kind of confederation, often linked to the ten horns in Daniel 7, which represents the state of the world right when that final judgment hits. It's a system constantly threatening to fracture, but still wielding immense iron-like power.
So it's incredibly formidable, but fundamentally flawed right up until the end. What happens at that end point? You mentioned judgment. Do they all just vanish?
That's a crucial point, and Daniel gives us a fascinating detail. When the stone cut out without hands, representing Christ's kingdom, strikes the statue's feet of iron and clay in Daniel 2.
That's the end of the fourth system.
Yes, it directly corresponds to the slaying of that terrifying fourth beast in Daniel 7. The totalitarian system is judged and destroyed. But get this, Daniel 7 verse 12 says, "As for the rest of the beasts, the lion, bear, leopard, their dominion was taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time."
Prolonged, so they don't vanish immediately.
Exactly. It suggests a staged collapse. The underlying systems, global finance, resource control, even spiritual ideologies, aren't instantly annihilated. Their dominion, their sovereign power to corrupt and oppress, is removed. They continue to exist, but stripped of that power.
And find a new purpose.
Perhaps finding fulfillment under the righteous rule of Christ during the millennial reign, that thousand-year reign on earth. Those functions, finance, resource management, maybe even forms of belief might continue, but without the evil, without the coercion.
That adds a whole different layer. Okay, so Daniel 2 and 7 give us the nature of these coexisting systems, how they rise, how they end. But you mentioned Daniel 11 gives us the how it shifts focus.
Precisely. Daniel 11 dramatically narrows the lens. It moves from that global overview to a very specific Holy Land-centric worldview.
Focused on Israel and the Middle East?
Yes. It lays out this incredibly detailed geopolitical roadmap. Specific conflicts, alliances, betrayals, mainly between figures identified as a king of the north and a king of the south.
We hear those terms a lot in interpretations.
And these conflicts, this back and forth, directly lead to the rise of that final iron kingdom and its ultimate ruler, who Daniel calls the willful king.
The Antichrist figure.
Many interpretations see him as that figure, yes. A leader of immense power, defiance against God, who achieves that global totalitarian control represented by the iron legs and feet.
So the events in Daniel 11 are like signposts.
They are the critical signposts. The beginning of those specific events, those precise geopolitical clashes described in Daniel 11, that's the ultimate signal that the final stage of prophecy is truly underway, the stage leading to the fourth beast consolidating its power.
Wow. Okay. This is where it all starts to tie together in a really profound way, isn't it? Because there seems to be a direct, almost unmistakable link between Daniel and the book of Revelation. It's not just thematic. It feels like one continuous story.
It absolutely does feel that way. Consider the messenger.
The angel in Daniel 10.
Yes, that glorious angelic messenger who appears to Daniel, gives him understanding about the latter days, reveals these prophecies. Many scholars believe this powerful messenger is the very same one who reveals himself to the Apostle John at the beginning of Revelation in chapter 1.
The same being, that would directly link the two books.
As one continuous prophetic narrative unfolding. And then there's the scroll.
Right. Daniel is told to seal up a scroll, isn't he?
Yes. In Daniel 12, he's specifically told to seal up the words of the scroll until the time of the end. Keep it hidden until then. Now jump to Revelation 5. What do we see? A scroll in God's right hand, sealed with seven seals.
The same scroll.
It appears to be the very same scroll. And crucially, no one is found worthy to open it except Jesus, the Lamb who was slain.
And the opening of that scroll. That kicks everything off in Revelation, right?
It's the direct catalyst for what we call the tribulation. That period of intense global upheaval and divine judgment. The unsealing begins in Revelation 6. And the events unleashed as each seal is broken. They seem to correspond directly to the events Daniel foresaw, particularly those detailed in Daniel 11.
So Daniel 11 describes the events, and Revelation 6 shows them being unleashed.
That's the connection. And the opening of the very first seal in Revelation 6, verse 2. That's critical.
What happens then?
It reveals a rider on a white horse, given a crown, who goes out conquering and to conquer.
The conqueror.
And this warrior king, this conqueror, seems to correspond directly to the powerful figure who emerges early in the Daniel 11 narrative, specifically verse 3, the one who rises after the initial conflicts.
So the first seal opening is the start of the Daniel 11 sequence playing out.
That's the interpretation. It's the trigger. Which brings up a pretty important question for us living now.
The question of urgency.
Exactly. What does all this mean for our sense of urgency right now?
Yeah. So bringing it back to you, the listener, living in this world with all the turmoil we see, why should you care right now as these headlines keep pouring in?
Well, Jesus himself gives us a critical time frame. In Matthew 24, verse 34, talking about the signs of the end times, he says something striking. Truly, I tell you, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened.
This generation.
When we apply that to these interconnected prophecies of Daniel and Revelation, it strongly implies that once these key signs appear, the rise of these global powers we've discussed, and crucially, the beginning of those specific Daniel 11 conflicts, then the entire remaining sequence unfolds within a single generation.
Not over centuries, but within one lifetime.
That's the implication. It emphasizes the potential immediacy of what we're discussing. It's not necessarily some far-off, distant future scenario.
So the critical thing to watch for them, it becomes really clear. The first three systems, the beasts, we connected perhaps to China, Russia, Iran, they seem to be currently rising, jostling, shaping the global landscape right now. We see that in the news.
Yes, that stage seems to be setting.
However, the definitive signal, the starting gun, if you will, is the start of the rise of that fourth beast.
Right, the totalitarian system.
As laid out in that specific roadmap of Daniel 11 verses 2 and 3, maybe, and confirmed by the breaking of that first seal in Revelation 6 verses 1 and 2, the appearance of that conquering rider.
That's the event. Mm-hmm. That's the signal that the world, according to this view, is actually entering the tribulation period. That's the moment to watch for.
So wrapping this up, what we've really uncovered today is that this constant drumbeat of news about the Middle East, with China, Russia, and Iran playing such central roles, well, it might not just be random geopolitical chaos.
Or just isolated conflicts.
Exactly. From this specific futurist perspective we've explored, it could actually be a profound portent. It could be the setting of the stage for these major prophetic events that Daniel outlined millennia ago.
The stage being set for the final act.
Yeah. And for those who are watchful, the detailed events described in Daniel 11, the ones detailing the rise of that final iron totalitarian system, those are the crucial signals to look for.
Christians in particular should perhaps be watching for the start of that fourth beast's rise, as described in Daniel 11 and confirmed by Revelation 6's first seal, because if this interpretation holds, that signals the actual beginning of the tribulation.
Okay, so as a final thought for you, the listener, to consider after this deep dive, reflect on that fascinating detail we touched on from Daniel 7 point in the Wood. While the fourth beast, the final oppressive system, is destroyed, the other beasts, representing finance, militarism, ideology, their dominion was taken away, yet their lives were prolonged.
They continue to exist, but without their power to oppress.
So the final thought for everyone listening is, what does it mean for you personally, to watch events unfold with this kind of vigilance, this kind of discernment, understanding that ancient prophecies might actually be echoing in today's headlines, maybe even foreshadowing tomorrow's?
It's definitely something to ponder deeply.